All right, welcome to August 13th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo.
And one of the reasons why I do this show is because understanding history gives us a platform to base our knowledge of today's politics.
I assembled this podcast from America's finest city, San Diego, California. And let's begin the show with a Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, and put our right hands over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen, brothers and sisters. Now, moving on to today's program, the second Deep Bottom Run campaign begins.
We'll wish a happy birthday to Kevin Plank, founder of Under Armour,
and another one to Annie Oakley. Good stuff. All right, so now let's get started. 1864. Second Deep Bottom Run campaign begins. It went by several other names: New Market Road, Bailey's Creek, Charles City Road, and White's Tavern. The Southerners called it Fussell's Mill. It was Union Major General Winfield S. Hancock, V. Robert E. Lee, and Charles W. Field. The result? Confederate victory. Union General Ulysses Grant had erroneously believed that the section between Richmond and Petersburg was lightly defended and concentrated his troops in that area. On the night of August 14th, Hancock and his men crossed the James River at Deep Bottom to invade Richmond, organizing a movement against the Weldon Railroad at Petersburg. Between August 14th and the 20th, the Union Army attempted to break the line and initially had some success at Fussell's Mill. However, Confederate counterattacks drove the Yankees out of a line-captured works. The battle raged on throughout the rest of the day. By the 20th, the Yankees returned to the south side of James, and the Confederates accomplished their mission of driving back the Union forces. The Federals lost around 3,000 men, the Rebels about 1,500, including Confederate General John Chambliss during cavalry fighting on the Charles City Road. 1972. Happy birthday, Kevin Plank, maker of Under Armour. From Kensington, Maryland, right on the outskirts of D.C., Kevin was a self-made hustler from a young age. A true entrepreneur, he didn't start out as one, but just wanted to solve a problem. And the problem was a gross one. During high school football practice or a game, a player can add up to 3 pounds of sweat on his cotton t-shirt. I wasn't a football player in high school, I was a swimmer. So since I was already in the swimming pool, when I sweated, it was no big deal during races. But Kevin was on the football field, and he wanted to find something that would stretch, absorb, and dry quickly. He spent his own money driving up to New York City, visiting fabric stores until he found the kind of fabric he needed to do the trick. He would attend the University of Maryland and graduated in 1996, where he developed and sold Cupid's Valentine, selling roses for a total sum of 17 grand. He would use that capital to fund Under Armour and make this new type of t-shirt in his grandma's basement. He approached attorney Howard Bush, aka Dude Robe, to help him set up his business, but he regrettably turned him down. At the time, Kevin was trying to pitch his product at NFL Europe, but Howie just didn't trust a guy who was selling inventory out of Granny's basement. That rejection would cost Bush around $250 million, he would later confess. That's right, Under Armour turned into a $7 billion company, all because Kevin wouldn't give up. Look, taking 3 pounds of sweat, or any other liquid for that matter, will just make you a more efficient player on the football field. In my case, since I was in the swimming pool, I had to lose 3 pounds of hair off my legs, and I wasn't willing to do that, which probably explains why I always came in second place during swim races. But getting back to Kevin. These days, aside from the fact that Under Armour actually took a hit for the first time in 2017, along with Macy's, Sears, Twitter, Ford Motor Company, and a couple dozen others, Kevin was still competing with giants such as Nike and Adidas for sports apparel. Kevin's used to taking a hit, and that's never slowed him down before. When he started out, he didn't know how to operate a sewing machine, but he figured it out. Kevin tells young entrepreneurs, be ready to adapt, change, and grow your product. There's too many entrepreneur wannabes who feel that the public would benefit from their products at face value. But a lot of times it doesn't work out like that. Quote, you've got to make it right. You've got to get it ready. Push yourself to where you need to be. Unquote. And just like the game of football itself, you gotta stay on the offensive and get that first down just to stay on the field. Then, work your way to the next first down and keep going down the field until you score. Kevin Plank, everyone, like a boss! In 1860, finally, happy birthday, Annie Oakley. She was an amazing sharpshooter from the Old West who toured with Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. She was born Phoebe Anna Moses on August 13, 1860, in Dark County, Ohio. She recalled her best shot came when she was 8 years old. She used a rifle to shoot a squirrel in the head to preserve the meat for that night's squirrel stew supper. Later on in life, Annie beat a professional shooter named Frank Butler by one clay pigeon. The two had a mutual respect for each other and married in June 1876. Annie and Frank were a team on exhibition shows, and she was called the Peerless Wing and Rifle Shot. Sitting Bull was particularly fond of her, calling her Little Sure Shot. They joined Buffalo Bill's Wild West Tour, where she would either shoot a cigar out of her husband's mouth or a quarter from his fingertips. She could also hit playing cards from 30 paces away and could even shoot distant targets from behind while looking in a mirror. Like a boss! In the 1900s, during World War I, she raised money for the Red Cross and taught women how to shoot. She was in a nearly debilitating car crash in the early 1920s, but she did manage to perform a bit in 1924. She died upon retirement in Greenville, Ohio, at age 66. Her husband, Frank, died 18 days later. She was immortalized in 1946 in Irving Berlin's Annie Get Your Gun and countless other film, book, and TV adaptations. In fact, Reba McEntire played the role of Annie in the Broadway musical. Happy birthday, Little Sure Shot. And so that's going to wrap it up, scholars, for August 13th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Take a look at the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's show. Civil War fans, what's your takeaway from the Deep Bottom Run campaign?
What about that Kevin Plank story? It's amazing to see what can happen in America when your back's against the wall and you gotta lift yourself out of it. Ingenuity at its finest.
What about Little Sure Shot? In my opinion, one of the reasons why the Old West was so fascinating. So yeah, let me know what you think and take a shot at some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on the website as well. Good luck with that. And be sure to check out tomorrow's show. We'll talk about the Liberty Tree, the Social Security Act, the Explorer 6, and the Berlin Wall. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. And until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. See you then.